Energy Transition, episode number 61. Our topic today is petro-masculinity, debasing the language through the energy transition. To give this title was a great discussion, no? Good morning to our audience. Irina, Tammy, David, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please, let me share some titles, some newspaper's title. Let me remove this one. 1 second only to upload the, let's see, it's okay. It's working. Yeah. And some titles, interesting titles, you know, oil and gas is misogynistic. Other one is fossil fuels and toxic masculinity. Petro-masculinity by Greta. Authoritarian desire. Fantastic, this title. No?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Drilling into petro-masculinity. Canada, Tammy, sometimes issue some new obstacle to sustainable change.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Some funny message from newspaper. But Tammy, please, could you please bring up the concept of petro-masculinity? I'm not sure, but is there an opposite expression for this expression or not?
I don't think so. And this is the problem with, an interesting feature of the progressive movement, because they're very much about changing language to suit whatever agenda is being put forward. And so we see this shift in language for lots of different things. And I think, for example, of the left in the world, in America in particular. So they started out as acknowledging being progressive back in the late 19th, early 20th century. Then when that became unpopular, they switched to social democrat. But when that became unpopular, they switched to liberal. So then for a long time, the left in America was considered liberals. And now when liberal became had a negative connotation, they switched back to progressive. So if you hear Hillary Clinton talking, she claims she's a progressive, not a liberal. And so it's part of this manipulation of language, because if you control the language, you control the narrative. And if you can get the people or groups that you're sort of speaking out against to use your language, there's power in that. And so when they decided to go after the oil and gas industry, or hydrocarbons, coal, oil, gas, and so on, it was very important to try and capture that language and frame the narrative around words that the progressive movement wanted. And I see this going back to, for example, 2009, where there was the Great Transformation Conference in Germany. And they were talking about how, you know, they've had at least 10 years since the Kyoto Accord of trying to get people to buy into the climate change narrative. It wasn't working. What do they need to do? And so Thomas Homer Dixon, who's a political scientist, philosopher from Canada, argued it needs to be a cultural shift. They have to shift the language, get into the schools, try and get the students and young people to embrace this language so that they could shape the narrative and how this was going. And we see that over the years that there's been a Marxist creep in it, because a lot of this is based in the sort of postmodern woke movement, which is rooted in Marxism. So you have words like climate denial. You saw that in some of the headlines there, right? So they use the denier label because that's linked negatively with people who deny the existence of the Holocaust. So now they've taken a word that's negative and put it towards people who are skeptical and scientists who disagree with stuff. And then they created a whole new word called the Anthropocene, which is a new geologic epoch of human presence distorting the world. So they control this language, ultra right wing, extreme right wing, never ultra left, never extreme left. Any weather becomes a climate event, you know, so climate crisis. We used to have wind chill in Canada a little bit, but now every winter, if it's cold, they call it wind chill. A typical nor'easter or a blizzard. is now referred to as a bomb cyclone. So you have this change of language, and it seeps into all of this thing. And petromasculinity is one of them. And one last thing I would just like to mention is that if you go back to some of the articles you showed, Armando, were from 2018. There's some earlier, going back to 2008, 2009. So you get obscure journals publishing stuff, which then gets picked up now and then by journalists who then amplify it. And so you get the buildup of this language. And then you get David's brilliant post on Friday where he talks about petromasculinity. So this is this is kind of where it's been, how it's been evolving and what it means for the energy transition.
Yeah, Dave, then Dina.
I think the opposite term of petromasculinity is sanity.
Nice one. Yes.
Because the thing about all of this is that we tend to forget that language can create reality, and it does create reality, the reality in our head. And this example of climate denialism that Tammy gave, it's perfect because that everyone, well, a lot of people would make immediately would make the analogy with Holocaust deniers, which is bad. It's really bad. So if you can make that analogy that denying climate change is equally bad.
Yeah.
It's just one of many examples of creating a new reality through language, in addition to cherry picking data to put in their report. And of course, the whole alarmist language that we discussed in an earlier edition, all this repetition of catastrophe, apocalypse, crisis, highway to hell. We laugh at it, but a lot of people take it seriously.
Yeah,
it's like it's dripping on your mind. And the longer it drips, if you consume news, it just stays there.
And you mentioned an email for me that they are omitting the footprint of wind and solar supply chain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Irina.
It's one of many things they are omitting. Mm-hmm. Now that some organization in Canada says that the word natural should be removed from gas because, and I quote indirectly, there is nothing natural about extracting gas from the ground. There is nothing natural about pipelines and all this infrastructure that brings the gas to people. And someone on Twitter, when I posted this, someone on Twitter said, because wind and solar are so natural in their creation.
Yeah. And David is in a car near, parked in a
yes.
block, Starbucks parking.
Yeah, in Huntsville, Texas. I want to point out I'm in my very petro-masculine SUV that runs on gasoline. I tried to time this to where I would be in the most petro-masculine roadside stop in America called Buckley's. But I got there too early. I bought my Diet Coke. But anyway, I had to go on down the road. I didn't want to sit in that parking lot for 45 minutes. By the way, which every Buckley's in the state of Texas, you pull in there, there are literally 100 gas pumps there. The store is as big as a Walmart. But it's a roadside convenience store. I'm not kidding, y'all. Look it up. Anyway, so I'm in the petro-masculine state of Texas. And, you know, this whole discussion is so relevant, though. I mean, you're right. We laugh about it, but it's not really funny. It's not really funny because it changes the dialogue in a way that avoids a fact-based, honest debate about any of this. And that's why the people on the left try to do these things. One of the best examples we haven't talked about yet started in around 2008 when the opposition to the shale revolution decided to start calling hydraulic fracturing by the term fracking.
Yeah.
And those who, like me, are fans of good science fiction know that there was a popular TV series at the time called Battlestar Galactica. It was a reboot of a 1970s series. And in that show, they used the word fracking as a cuss word, a substitute for the other actual F word. And so by adopting that term, for hydraulic fracturing, this very safe and well-regulated industrial process that by 2008 had been in practice, common practice for over 60 years. They literally turned that practice into a cuss word in American society and eventually global society. And so it's very effective. It's very smart, very effective. And it's a good way for them to avoid talking about facts and reality and, you know, having any kind of an honest debate. And it's exactly the same tactic as the whole climate denier thing and trying to equate that with Nazism, which is, you know, the most incredible thing ever. But it's a very common practice, and it just is, you know, when I look at it, I think what it really boils down to is proof that all of this energy transition propaganda we see in the news media is tied to left-wing politics and left-wing political movements. It is basically socialism dressed up as environmentalism. And to accomplish that, you have to convince the public not to actually take the time to look at the facts and reality behind the changing language and all the illusions that are out there. So anyway, that's my rant for the day, my petro-masculine rant for the day.
Irina, maybe this is a strategy to make, renewables weaker than fossil fuels?
No, it's a strategy to make them more desirable. They are, it's very simple. You have good and evil. Renewables, yeah. So-called renewables, are the good, and petro-masculine hydrocarbons are evil.
Yeah.
And it's really dumbed down in order to make it understandable for the greatest number of people. That's why they went from global warming to climate change, because yeah. Obviously the weather was changing not only in one direction towards warmer weather, but there were different changes. That's why we get this, what was it? Winter chill, did you say, Tammy? Instead of
wind chill.
Wind chill.
So right. Yeah. So when the wind blows, when it's cold, they call it wind chill. And oh my gosh, it's a deep.
It's never happened before. Yeah.
Happened before. You get that a lot.
We never get normal weather anymore. Everything is extreme. Yeah. 30 degrees in the summer is extreme. It's always 30 degrees in the summer in Southern Europe and even more. Of course, there are fluctuations, but all this. And along with this language of extreme weather and of climate catastrophe, there is also the language of the transition. Yeah. How basically the message appears to be that if we just build enough wind and solar and possibly hydrogen, we will reverse climate change within our lifetimes, which is not the case. Whatever we do, we cannot reverse these changes that have been happening allegedly over more than 100 years. In fact, these changes have been happening for a longer period, as some scientists, dissenting scientists, climate denialists argue, and they support their arguments with data.
Yeah.
And some, until about a couple of years ago, perhaps, there were some who are still being given, access to media, who said that there is nothing we can do to reverse climate trends, current climate trends. It's over. We can't do anything. I haven't seen any of these voices recently. They got kicked out of the discourse.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
They were too petro-masculine.
Do you believe that? Do you believe that normal people are buying this narrative or not?
Well, sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, and most people buy it. Although when you look at public opinion polling, I mean, there's a significant percentage who don't. But, you know, the average person on the street, and I'm talking in the United States because that's where I am, doesn't know anything about any of this. And has no real reason in their normal lives to know anything about any of this, right? I'm not saying they're not intelligent people. I'm just saying that people live their lives, and in most yeah. people's lives, none of this is relevant. And so all they want, all they know is they want the lights to come on when they flip that switch, and they want the gasoline to go in their tank when they put the nozzle in there and turn it on, right? That's their daily interaction with energy. And so they don't know any of this. And so, but what they do know is they turn on the 5:30 newscast on ABC or CBS or NBC, you know, 20 to 25 million Americans do that every day. And that's where they get their news from, such as it is, yeah. if you can call it news. And so that these are the narratives that are on those newscasts, and that becomes, you know, that gets trumpeted out into the population every day, and on the 24-hour cable channels, it's the same thing every day. And you know, so what it comes down to is the climate change movement is able to do this because it has the media, the preponderance of the news media, is happy to take their talking points and include it in their stories, and without any critical analysis or taking a look at the facts. And so that's how it all becomes spread throughout our society. And yeah, unfortunately, most people are buying this.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what's interesting is that how, if we look at specific examples of the language and the fact that people could be convinced that carbon dioxide is pollution, which, you know, yeah. you need it. Plants absolutely need it to grow, to produce oxygen for us. And now they're shifting the language with respect to nitrogen. Nitrogen is 78% of our atmosphere. And, you know, I'm looking at my children's chemistry textbooks and biology textbooks and so on, and they talk about the nitrogen cycle and the carbon cycle. And it goes around. But now they're talking about in Europe, nitrogen pollution. So they're using the same target targeting that they did with carbon dioxide. And now they want to demonize nitrogen, which yeah. is our air. So now, you know, it makes no sense. And the fact that they get away with, you know, shifting the language like this, and who pushes back? You know, like David mentioned, there's no critical analysis when these terms are brought up. At least in the mainstream media. And when you have not just the news organizations, you've got the academics churning out study after study using this type of language. It's very difficult to be resistant to it if you're just an average person who, like David said, is just trying to live their life. But they hear it. They hear it all the time.
Right. They hear it all the time. And, you know, the other thing that's happened even before they started moving to nitrogen is where carbon dioxide is concerned. They used to talk about anthropogenic man-caused carbon dioxide emissions, right?
Yeah.
And they would say, well, you know, natural gas is 23% of man-caused carbon, or the oil and gas industry causes 23% of anthropogenic carbon emissions. But now they just say,
yeah.
natural gas causes 23% of carbon emissions. Well, the anthropogenic carbon emissions are a trace element, literally a rounding error of yeah. what's in the atmosphere in total. You're talking about, and that's why they had to eliminate talking about the word anthropogenic.
It's a long word. It's a difficult yeah. word.
Right.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
had to eliminate that qualifier to amplify the problem. It's the same principle as when in the 90s, you know, they used to talk about oil spills in terms of barrels of oil, because barrels of oil is how oil was always transported. You know, literally when yeah. the industry started, it was in wooden 42-gallon barrels of oil. Well, if you talk about it in terms of barrels, that's a smaller number than if yeah. you multiply yeah. it by 42 and talk about it in terms of gallons. So the news media in the 90s just immediately, like on a dime, turned, and in every story it became, oh, it was a 23 million barrel oil spill, or gallon oil spill,
gallons,
rather than
yeah.
barrels. And anyway, yeah. So
that's well, in Canada, they go further. They use liters. They yeah, use liters, Brazil which is even same. Bigger
yeah, even
number,
better,
right?
Even better.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, 10,000 yeah. liters. It's like, what is that?
Irina, what big oil are thinking about this? Are they participating on this petro masculinity?
I have no idea what they think about it, but I'm willing to suggest that they think it's complete crap, because it is. What is petro masculinity? I see this attempt to marry the social politics side of the liberal agenda with the energy side of the liberal agenda. The agenda being the push to a complete transformation of human society and human economy. And it's seeping through. I mean, you see, if you are determined that there's toxic masculinity all around you, of course, you will find it in an industry that is so dominated by male workers. I mean, there are women working on oil rigs.
Yes, there
are. Of course, but there aren't as many. There are women working as linemen or line women, I guess, but it's a tiny number. It's a male-dominated industry for what I think are very obvious reasons, such as the fact that it's physically demanding work. And women are biologically less strong, purely physically. But nobody cares about that. It's toxic because it's male dominated, hence petromasculinity.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could add there, so in Canada we have this new Impact Assessment Act, and they brought gender-based assessment into it. Now, how can you have a gender-based assessment unless you've got toxic masculinity in there?
So what is a gender-based assessment? I'm sorry.
I don't know. But any project must be evaluated based on gender. They bring it in. I don't know. So what was interesting is in October, the Canadian Bar Association had an article saying that they need to bring gender-based analysis into environmental and energy regulation and try to find a way to bypass the separation of powers in the Canadian Constitution, because energy resource development is the purview of the provinces. And so in order to bring it, and they even use petromasculinity in this article, that they can bring it in by bypassing this the separation of powers, to say if we do it through the environmental impact assessment, which is a federal thing, then we can bring petromasculinity to the resource industries, in particular hydrocarbon development. So this would then be used in litigation. It would be used to, because you know the ESG scores, part of the social part is your gender balance. So how, you know, you get a bad ESG score because you're a petromasculine industry and you don't employ enough women.
I was just about to ask that. Do some people want more women to work in the oil sands? Or since the oil industry is evil, women should not work in the oil sands? I'm confused.
I know. And so I think really it's meant as a bludgeon to prevent the development in general. So sure. If you have that, you deny the financing, you can't get the approval. Sorry, you know, impact assessment, you don't have enough gender balance. Sorry, we can't give you this approval. So that's a way to stymie development. But they just use this cultural language instead of, you know, harming the environment.
It's amazing. We have to give it to them, to these transition pushes. They come up with such different ways to harm the oil and gas industry. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. It's like that. The case that you had cited actually was before the Federal Trade Commission in the United States, where they wanted to remove the term natural. It wasn't Canada, it was the United States. Canada's going a different route through Competition Bureau, through greenwashing, by saying they have to change the words that they use to describe their industry because it's misleading the public on what the industry's dirty. So you can in no way say that you're net zero and clean in any way. So it's trying to control that language so that people feel bad about using petrol or diesel in their cars and having you know, power and so on. And I think of like the other label they're using all the time is fossil. So fossil banks, fossil capitalism, fossil gas, even fossil fascism, like really, fossil violence. So here they're now employing fossil as a negative label.
A bad label. And the government, David, what's the position of the U.S. government and Irina, East Europe, and Tammy, West Europe? What are the position of the government?
Well, our government is adopting all of this whole hog, in the Biden administration, for sure. Just a few years ago, you had a different administration, a different posture on most of this. The problem becomes it ends up being embedded in the permanent bureaucracies at the federal level and state governments. And eventually it all, it's like a cockroach infestation. You can treat it and push it back, but you can't ever kill it off completely. And, eventually you stop treating it and it, as the Biden administration has done, it just becomes a major infestation again. And so you can never stop it completely until the voters somehow figure it all out and stop voting for people who favor this sort of thing, which, given the nature of our education system and the biases in our news media, probably isn't ever going to happen. So it's not a good situation any way you look at it for the future of energy in the United States.
Yeah. How is in Bulgaria? And
well, we are backward in Bulgaria. We don't care as much about the climate crisis as we probably should.
Yeah.
According to central European authorities. But we are very enthusiastic about wind and solar. I mean, the people who build them are enthusiastic, and with good reason, because there's all these millions of euros that are going to be coming for these developments. But I don't think we've reached the stage where we demonize the oil and gas industry so much. Probably part of the reason is that we don't have an oil and gas industry. I mean, we have reserves. Total Energies is exploring for oil offshore in the Black Sea. I don't think they've struck anything meaningful. But there was a massive backlash against Chevron exploration in northern Bulgaria, where there are, according to a friend of mine from the U.S. oil and gas industry, quite substantial reserves. But we were against it because fracking destroys nature and all that. I used to think the same thing before I learned that it doesn't have to disturb as much of the land as most people think. So we're against that. But generally, there's no cockroach infestation of the scale that we see in the US or Western Europe. For now.
And Tammy, how is in Canada and the UK?
Well, the UK has embraced a lot of this wholeheartedly. I mean, Boris Johnson tried to rewind the fracking thing, as did Liz Truss in her super temporary prime ministership. And then it was, Extinction Rebellion was born in the UK, and they go crazy for all this stuff. And they seem to have the ear of the politicians who are worried about it. And I think one of the problems is that there's so much misinformation that gets put out there by the environmental groups that when it is resisted, or it's smaller media organizations who point out the problems, but it's the trickle down effect, right? And as David and Irina have both said, it erodes people's sense of what's proper and what's good. So, everything, like Irina said, is broken down into black and white. So we have greedy versus caring. You're greedy if you use a petrol car, but you're caring if you have an EV. And they have this dichotomy between dirty and clean. So we have dirty oil and clean renewables, or even the use of renewable. But, we're using that language when we talk about big oil. mean, who came up with the term big oil? Well, it was the environmentalists, in order to have the big bad guy that people can focus their 1 minute of hate or 2 minutes of hate on, right? We don't talk about big green so much. And, big green,
big wind, and big solar.
Actually, I saw big wind in an article the other day.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, could be a development. But then it comes down to like the planet of the humans, where what they were really saying is that we shouldn't have so much energy at all, that we need to be giving up reliable energy. We should, we're damaging the planet. And it's interesting how they always set themselves up as being the saviors and the only ones who care about clean air, clean water, and forests and trees. Like everybody cares about in the West, cares about clean air and water. And the hydrocarbon industries try their best to balance that out. But again, it's missing the cost benefit analyses and so on. But so it's interesting that the UK has embraced it. Canada has. Germany is crazy for all the green stuff, although now they're opening up more coal plants, of course, because they want reliable energy.
But as they close their nuclear plants down, yes.
Genius
strategy.
Yeah, genius.
So for the conclusions, ladies, see if you agree with me. Check if the conclusion is good. Let's give back the car keys for David, so he can go to Houston from 65 miles. That's nowadays.
Give petro-masculinity a chance.
Thank you so much. It was a great conversation today again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.